Coming up on today's program.
40s, I listened to a lot of black radio, meaning radio stations that catered to black communities, one out of Newark, WNJR. And they would play rhythm and blues records and jazz records back to back and wouldn't make a distinction. It's all music.
The man with a lifelong love of jazz music. We'll tell you about him. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISA Weekend. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. Coming up in today's program, we've got One Small Step, also another edition of Translucent, and we've got some bluegrass music for you. But we open today's show with a tribute to former longtime WISO music host Steve Schwerner, who died last week. Schwerner hosted a jazz program on WISO for 50 years, starting when he was a student at Antioch College. Dave Barber is the host of WISO's current local jazz program, Night Train. Here's how he remembers his friend and colleague.
One of Steve's heroes growing up is the radio host Symphony Sid, a major voice in and around modern jazz in New York City. That inspiration helps lead him to major lifelong heroes like Charlie Parker and Bud Powell. He attends Antioch College and does a jazz program as a student. Then later he returns to become dean of students at the college, and he's able to share his knowledge with a couple of generations of listeners on WISO. If it was a radio audience or a group of students of any age, Steve never missed an opportunity to share his enthusiasm and love for the joy and beauty of jazz. He savored it.
Barber will honor Schwerner in a tribute show on Night Train this Monday night, 8 p.m. Filmmaker Steve Bognar and WISO music host Jennifer Berman will join him. Schwerner hosted his last show at WISO in 2008, but a year before his departure, Bognar captured Schwerner in a documentary film called Jazz DJ. Here's audio of Schwerner from that film.
When I went through the connections between jazz and civil rights movement, that one of Coltrane's most beautiful ballads is called Alabama, which he actually wrote right after the four girls got killed in the church bombing. That Mingus and Max Roach were famous in jazz circles as outspoken political activists. And jazz became more and more abstract at exactly the same time. So that free jazz, lack of scales and harmonies, just played freely. Some people argued, like Archie Shepp, it was a political statement. I remember Brock has written thousands of words on this was a political statement about free jazz means we're fighting for our freedom. First jazz album called Free Jazz specifically is an Ornette Coleman album, and it's got a picture of a Jackson Pollock painting on it. And my interpretation is that Ornette meant by free, like abstract expressionism. I think the two are not irreconcilable. I think they both go hand to hand. If you hung out in SNCC offices, you'd hear jazz playing all the time. If you go into the CORE office, you'd hear jazz playing all the time. SNCC and CORE, SNCC stands for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, CORE stands for the Congress on Racial Equality, and they were the two probably most militant of the organized groups in the civil rights movement. And that you'd also hear Marvin Gaye and the Temptations and Motown stuff, but you'd hear them both. And that actually, as I was growing up in the 40s, I listened to a lot of black radio, meaning radio stations that catered to black communities, one out of Newark, WNJR. And they would play rhythm and blues records and jazz records back to back and wouldn't make a distinction. It's all music.
Steve Schwerner from Steve Bognar's short film Jazz DJ. You can find that film at WISO.org. This week we reached out to Bognar, who told us Steve Schwerner was a true mensch, calling him principled and thoughtful, attentive to everyone around him, and humble, even though he was deeply wise and had a voluminous knowledge on life and other subjects, and certainly on jazz. Bognar went on to say that listening to Schwerner's weekly jazz show, he learned so much about the great American art form of jazz music. Dave Barber called Bognar's black and white film of Schwerner an intimate, close capture of a lifelong love affair with jazz. WISO General Manager Luke Dennis also shared his thoughts, saying Steve Schwerner represented the best of WISO. He loved jazz so much that he devoted decades to turning others on to it. Dennis said Schwerner set the standard for volunteer music hosts at WISO, knowledgeable, warm, dedicated. He recalls the jazz host had an incredible record collection and said, "We have lost a WISO legend. He will be missed, but you can hear his legacy in the good work of today's crop of volunteer music programmers on WISO." In a Facebook post, Schwerner's family recalled his love for Antioch College, where he became dean of students and taught classes that included the civil rights movement and the history of jazz. Civil rights was certainly an entrenched family value for the Schwerners. His younger brother, Mickey, was one of three activists murdered in Mississippi in January 1964 during a black voter registration drive. The investigation of those murders were the basis of the 1988 film Mississippi Burning. Schwerner gave an interview for an oral history project in 2017 with Brooklyn College, speaking about his decades of activism. This includes when he marched against segregation, protested the wars in Vietnam and Iraq, did draft counseling during the Vietnam War, taught classes on the civil rights movement, and helped start Park Slope Food Co-op. The movement for justice is invariably two steps forward and one step back. Maybe two steps back, Schwerner said, adding, "You're not human if you're not working to make people's lives better." In her Facebook post last week, Schwerner's daughter, Greta, said, "Our beloved father, Steve Schwerner, died yesterday. He loved our mother, Nancy, who he called the love of his life, his daughters, Cassie and Greta, his four grandchildren, jazz, Chinese food, and the Knicks, pretty much in that order." Greta also said Schwerner died in the most peaceful way imaginable, at the end of a long life, in his own bed, without pain, drinking scotch, listening to Charlie Parker and his president, Lester Young, with his family beside him. So the next time you've got a glass in hand, scotch or otherwise, maybe raise that glass in honor of our friend and colleague, Steve Schwerner. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. Well, from a jazz lover, we move on to lovers of a different genre of music. As you know, live music has been a part of WISO since the early days. From our performance studio space, we've shared music across genre lines from all around the world, and especially from right here in the Miami Valley. That tradition continued this past Wednesday night when Juliet Frumholt invited bluegrass musicians, the Possum Creek Ramblers, into the new WISO studios for conversation and music. Let's hear some of that.
Time it flies on way too quickly. Those days now memory. I'd give up all the sleep I get now just to have you here with your mom and me. Sleepless nights and tired mornings. Poop, poop, and spit up on your clothes. But you never stop to wonder. You never stop to wonder, was it worth it when you've seen your baby grow?
Possum Creek Ramblers live here on Kaleidoscope on WISO and Novaphonic. Welcome, everybody. So happy to have you all here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Well, let's start out. How was it that the five of you started making music together? I have some suspicions about a couple of you because there's some familial harmonies and musicality happening here.
Yeah, for the folks at home that if you can't see us, two of us look awful a lot alike, and that's because we're twins. And Matt is actually, so there's five of us in the band, and Matt's the second newest to this band, but he had been filling in for us for a while. We've been playing music together for quite a while, really since, he started with some things in high school, and then in college we briefly played a little bit together. I was playing the trombone at that point, and he was playing a few different things, and then, we kind of circled back to where we had another band called Lemongrass, which Jeff is also in. Jeff's our bassist. And then, you know, I kind of felt like I'm Chris here. I'm kind of the band guy for Possum Creek Ramblers.
Dictator.
I'm the one who prints the stickers, dictate the things, tell people when to show up and all that fun stuff. But I wanted more gigs. And Matt at the time wanted to hang out with his family. But yeah, so I started another band and I roped Jeff into it, who at the time was playing guitar for us with Possum Creek Ramblers. And then over the years, we've accumulated Caitlin on the fiddle and vocals, who you'll hear the next song that we play. And then after that, Matt and we got Tim on my left. I don't know what direction he is in the radio sphere, but he's playing the guitar for us. So
in the first two songs you were playing, I was like, oh, this is just real life stuff. You know, this is why won't you call me back? And you know, like life as a new parent. It's beautiful. Tell me a little bit about how the songwriting process works for you all.
Well, this might sound a little bit funny, but this is Chris talking. At least for me, it's like if I decide that I want to write a song and I sit down for long enough, something comes out. I won't say that they're always good, but you know, it's rare that I have an idea really kicking around for a very long time. I do have one that I recently wrote that we'll play on the next album, that I was kind of had a little bit of writer's block, and so I had Matt, you know, pinch hit, and that's the first song we ever wrote together. So I wrote a couple verses and he wrote one. But yeah, usually it's just kind of like we're out in our own world and, you know, kind of mess around a little bit, see what kind of chord changes sound good. And unfortunately for a lot of the jams and stuff, like I usually come up with stupid chord changes. And so, you know, that doesn't always, you know, it's not always stuff you can play with other people, but these guys always humor me. So
what's it like when you collaborate on a song? Like, so it starts with one of you. How do you all then like add your parts and add those harmonies?
Well, I mean, we kind of, you know, one person kind of starts the thing and they come up with the lead line. We're kind of, so the band that Chris and I were in for a good bit before this was called North and South. There was a guy named Joe Bausman, who taught us a lot of what we know. And actually, these are some of his instruments up here that we're playing tonight. And so what he would do with us is he would walk us through line by line, note by note. We would take one note at a time, pencil in on a piece of paper. This is the note I'm supposed to be singing. So Chris and I kind of learned harmony that way. And a lot of that sort of stuck to the point where we don't have to go note by note at this point. And then Caitlin, being classically trained as a vocal musician, she's kind of got a leg up on us.
Yeah, she was underselling herself. She can sight read. The rest of us are illiterate, or
yeah,
at least
it's amazing.
I am.
If you've never seen somebody like sight read and play like at speed, it's incredible.
They're selling themselves short. We're all incredible musicians. So happy to be up here.
We are incredible musicians.
We are incredible musicians. The Possum Creek.
In different ways. We all have our strengths.
Well, I do think it's cool to have so many different musical backgrounds, you know, everything from classical training to playing with rock and funk bands, you know, and coming into this music to, you know, really falling in love with that acoustic sound. That's kind of what you need to make it work, is all of those different backgrounds and, you know, squish them all together and do something awesome. And speaking of something awesome, you guys have a new album out.
We do. It's called Sleepless Nights. And we have some CDs available for purchase at our upcoming gigs, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, in a minute. But yeah, it's we're also, you can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, any of the major streaming services. We got a lot of stuff out on YouTube too, if you want to see some of our live stuff, and Facebook, Instagram. So,
Possum Creek Ramblers live here on Kaleidoscope on WISO and Novaphonic. Their new album, Sleepless Nights, is out now, and you can see them live April 11th at Clifton Opera House right here close to Yellow Springs, in Columbus on April 12th, and at the Dayton Art Institute on April 16th. More dates and all kinds of good stuff at PossumCreekRamblers.com. Y'all, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just one room to vacuum. My bedroom is my kitchen. Single digit electric bills. How's that for eco living? Just one light bulb to replace. For exercise, I run in place while staring out my window at wall. 15 feet by 25. I never have felt skeptical, but there's just one way to know. Come on down to my basement studio.
the Possum Creek Ramblers on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for sharing your weekend with WYSO. Up next on the program, WYSO and StoryCorps, as you may know, invited community members to take part in One Small Step, the program that brings together people from the region for honest conversations with someone they've never met. Today we hear from Kevin Price of Bellbrook and Rob Williams of Dayton. They met at the WYSO studios last fall and quickly realized they were both retired from the Air Force and had a lot in common. But with the No Kings rally just days away at that time, their conversation turned to where they disagree, especially on President Donald Trump. Rob begins this conversation.
So you teach people to fly?
Yeah, I mean, I learned to fly in the Air Force. And sure. They made it easy to do a conversion from military instructor to civilian instructor. I had to take a couple tests and go see somebody, answer some questions, and here you go. So,
what plane did you fly on active duty?
Started out in F-4s, and then as a backseater in F-4s, okay, and then, okay. Then went to the F-16 and did that for about 14 years. So,
on your bio here, you said passionate to serve and do your part to make the world a better place. So this weekend is a No Kings protest. And a few years ago, my daughter, she was going to go. Mm-hmm. And I said, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm scared for you because things happen at those protests. She says, Dad, if everybody were to feel like that, then where would we be? And I just wonder, what are your thoughts about the No Kings protest and what's going on right now?
Yeah. My gosh, where do I even start? I'm going to struggle for the words here because it's hard to think about this. But I think it's a reaction by a segment. And I'm just being honest with you here. Mm-hmm. A segment of our country who does not really embrace the fact that we do have a democracy. Mm-hmm. That we have a duly elected president. Mm-hmm. And when they try to characterize that president as a fascist and they use inflammatory language that leads to attempted, assassination of him twice. Mm-hmm. You see that same kind of language that led to the Charlie Kirk assassination. That's where I have problems because the truth is not that he is trying to set up himself as a king or as a dictator. And in spite of all the efforts of the other side to characterize him as a criminal, again, let's be reasonable here. He's elected. Mm-hmm. And in spite of the characterizations of him, he is using our Constitution and, as it's written. And I don't accept the premise, I guess, is probably a good way of saying it.
Okay. Fair enough.
But I would listen to what people have to say. You asked the question, I'm responding, so I'm very curious as to what your perspective would be.
So he was talking about warrior ethos, all those things the military does about mm-hmm. how we are stronger, better, kill this and this and this. Mm-hmm. And I know warriors. Mm-hmm. I know some of them personally. Mm-hmm. They don't behave or talk that way. I know that. Mm-hmm. And when I saw him speaking to these people in the audience and that, and I was really uncomfortable with it. And I felt like the looks on the people's faces, they were uncomfortable with it too, but they were stoic because that's what we do. But I struggle with that. So,
well, clearly you and I share that passion for our country and you're not going to rubber stamp everything I say. And likewise, and we recognize we have maybe some potential differences. But we're going to walk out of here and I'm still going to take you flying if you want to. And I just really appreciate talking with you and glad that you're willing to do this, at all.
Yeah. I try to do something every day to make this spinning ball better in the little bit that I can. And that means getting outside my comfort zone. My buddies are asking me, hey, you want to go out and do something, after work? And I said, I got an appointment over there at WYSO, and they're like, to do what? And I'm like, well, we're going to do this. And they're like, you're always doing something weird, dude.
That was Air Force veterans Rob Williams and Kevin Price. One Small Step at WYSO is produced by the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices. The series is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and is presented by the Charles F. Kettering Foundation. And on this week's episode of Translucent, we meet a researcher studying the lives of transgender young people and what families can do better to support their growth and well-being.
Hi, I'm Lee Wade, and you're listening to Translucent, a series that amplifies trans voices, humanizes our community, and creates space for the real everyday conversations that don't make headlines. Dr. Jennifer McGuire is a professor at the University of Minnesota and extension specialist, focusing on outreach for transgender youth. For over two decades, she's listened to trans kids and researched how supportive family environments impact their well-being. Her work began with focus groups at youth centers.
I went to visit four different community centers kind of on the west side of the country and did focus groups with the young people that were in the trans youth support group. And then ask them about, like, what can the community center do to support you? And so in doing that, I really got clear that family support was a major stressor for a lot of people. My research training is in adolescent development and family relationships. And so I thought, well, this is a place where I could be an ally and do some work that might be supportive of enhancing the well-being of kids.
Dr. McGuire grew to understand some of the challenges that trans youth face when they're not in a supportive environment.
Because I, at the time, was a parent to some young adults and other adolescents, and I thought, oh, these are all the kinds of things that I'm doing with my own kids. And so things like helping to find the right school to go to that was going to be safe and comfortable for them, and making sure that they had health insurance and hopefully insurance that covered their gender-affirming care, although at that time, hardly any did. And then also like housing and employment opportunities and the underlying family strains meant that this set of young people were walking through the world with less support.
Dr. McGuire began looking into what a supportive family actually looks like.
A truly supportive family member refrains from articulating their doubts or saying negative little comments or getting in the way of the person who's trans, that it's an unambiguous support of, like, this is your life, it's your body, I will support what you want. You know, we talk about what you need, and, you know, I'm here to support you.
Creating an inclusive home can start with small everyday choices, like bringing queer books or movies into the house, for example, help show acceptance. In practice, that support can also look like using affirming language with other family members, helping pay for things when possible, like clothes, haircuts, or hormones, providing emotional support for mental health, and surrounding young people with an inclusive community, including LGBTQ+ friends. But McGuire says there's another piece that families often struggle with, and that's boundaries.
I think the biggest parental guidance at this point is this is your child or your family member's process, right? It's not your process. It's not a reflection of you. It's not a reflection of how good of a parent you are or aren't. It's your child's process. And so being sure to have a boundary of, like, this is what your child is going through and your job is to support your child in their own development. To the extent that you need to process or think it through or have feelings about it, you can take those to your own support network outside of the family. You can seek out support from, like, trans family networks, PFLAG, or other kinds of parent support groups.
Dr. McGuire says she hopes that awareness, understanding, and acceptance can give young people the space to thrive and support their mental health, so the small changes in the home can ripple out and create a safer, more inclusive world for all LGBTQ+ youth.
This is one of the darkest times I've seen for trans kids. So what I would hope for is that the stigma and the pushback goes away. So that would be my first hope, is that society changes. And then my second hope would be that we have, you know, and I hope this for everyone in our country, that we have medical care that takes care of the things that we need, that supports us. My third is just, you know, the capacity to have fulfilling relationships with family, be that family of origin or chosen family.
A huge thank you to Dr. Jennifer McGuire for helping us understand what support can look like. I'm Lee Wade, and thank you for listening to Translucent.
Translucent is supported by the Ruby Girls Foundation and Square One Salon and Spa.
This is Bird Note. Two wrens are singing in a canyon in the arid Sonoran Desert. A cactus wren sings from dense stands of Cholla cactus at the base of the canyon wall. At the same time, a canyon wren sings from the open face of the towering stone wall above. The songs intermingle. The two wrens share common ancestry, and they're close neighbors in the canyons. Yet their songs evolved along divergent acoustic lines, because a bird's song must carry well in its immediate habitat. The rough-trilled phrases of the cactus wren song pulse through the dense cactus, while the clear tones of the canyon wren echo off the hard stone, carrying a long distance. With cactus and canyon wrens, there's a clear sense of how the different habitats, cactus and stone, live in their songs. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein. Support comes from Wild Delight Bird Food, offering a variety of blends designed to mimic the natural resources wild birds crave. Available at Chewy.com.
And that's a wrap for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Thanks so much for sharing your weekend with WISO. This program is available as a podcast, and you can download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jerry Kenny. We'll have more highlights and conversations for you next weekend. Please join us then.